Welcome, y'all, to the Strength Academy podcast. This is Mundo, joined with Grayson.
How's it going, everybody?
And today we are going to talk a little bit about the exercise naming conventions of a lot of the exercises that we do, and then probably get into a little bit about what we're describing as hustler culture and how that's kind of affecting our daily lives and even, you know, in the gym as well.
Yeah, so I think this first topic kind of came up because we were having everybody in the gym doing muscle snatches this week. And we realized that there's an area where our terminology for things didn't quite match up exactly. Because when I say muscle snatch, I mean there's no contact on the way up and the bar is turned over to the leg straight. And the way that you were always... when you say muscle snatch, you meant that we made contact.
Yeah.
So this kind of sparked this, you know, first off is, you know, there are so many things that have similar names or the same names depending on who you're listening to. So, because for instance, I can think of like four different things that are muscle snatch.
Okay.
So there's no contact, keeping the elbow high until turnover. There's no contact, flipping the bar at eye level and finishing with a press. And then there were both of those same things, but with contact. All four of those, you could really only call muscle snatch if you don't want to make it a paragraph.
Right.
You know? So it's, you know, how do you think that, you know, is it people looking to simplify when they write something out that leads to so many things having the same name? Or so that they're not writing snatch two straight legs with contact and press.
Right.
You know, so like, is that really a more accurate way that we should be writing though? Should we be more descriptive in the exercise naming?
I mean, well, the whole reason that something gets named is to simplify it and identify it quickly. And because weightlifting has a large amount of variation in the ability to break down the exercises individually, I think that there's no standardization from anywhere specific. Like the IWF doesn't say this is what a muscle snatch is, or there's no like rule book that says, you know, this is exactly what this exercise should be.
Yeah.
As opposed to like other sports and other fitness modalities, there's maybe a specific thing that applies only to that sport. Like for instance, like a free throw. In basketball, you stand behind the line, you take your shot, you know, and there's specific rules that are centered around that, but you know it's a free throw, right?
Yeah.
So the thing is like with weightlifting, you have these variations of exercises, and depending on how descriptive you want to make them, you can make them very, very descriptive. Like you just said, you could have, well, for instance, I call us a muscle snatch the movement when you take it from the floor, you make contact and then put it up overhead all in one motion with everything locking out in a continuous motion all the way to the top. But instead of describing it like that, it's a muscle snatch. The only variation that Grayson and I kind of disagree on is whether you make contact or not on a muscle snatch. So that's why when people say a muscle snatch with no contact, like then I'm like, oh, okay, so just keep it close to the body. No contact on the way up, pulling all the way through. But with contact, you're just doing a muscle snatch. So it's already implied that you're making contact. So
yeah, so I know that, you know, Greg Everett kind of refers to what I call a muscle snatch as a snatch long pull.
Mm-hmm.
So my reasoning for the no contact is when I took the Art of Coaching weightlifting seminar with Ursula, and I've heard her talk about it on her podcast a couple times, but to her, the prefix muscle is like the prefix power. Power means to receive above parallel. Muscle means to not make contact.
Oh.
And then, so you can do a muscle squat snatch, which is a snatch without contact from the floor. Or, so like a muscle snatch would be no contact to standing, a muscle squat snatch or a muscle power snatch.
Okay.
Or a hip muscle snatch, which would be no foot movement from the hip. So she considers like a muscle clean or a muscle squat clean would be no contact, no moving the feet. into the full squat. So I kind of consider muscle to be a prefix the same way power is a prefix.
Okay. That makes sense. And well, and the thing is, like, Greg and Ursula are constantly, like...
They disagree about that as well. They disagree about
that as well. So that's funny between the two of them. That they don't see the terminology the same way either. Although they're prescribing the same movements.
Yeah.
It's just they're calling them different things.
And it's interesting because, I mean, you see a lot more of the no contact stuff out of, I feel like, the Russians. Like, yeah. Especially guys like Vasily Polytnikov, who it seems like just doing no contact muscle snatches is the only thing that he ever trains.
Yeah. North Bardanian is another one. Like,
he does a lot of like the no contact full snatch stuff, but it seems like every video Polytnikov posts is just him muscle snatching 150 plus, which is just preposterous.
It's preposterous.
But yeah, so I think that it just really highlights this, what region of the world are you getting the information from? Like, it just depends on which coaches you've interacted with, because everybody calls a lot of things, like, everything's got a different name. Some people snatch pull means like a high pull, but a snatch extension just means the shrug,
right?
Or you're gonna have different, like, some people will call, you know, snatch pull, they just mean snatch grip deadlift, maybe. And they'll call it a fast pull if they want you to explode at the top.
Right.
So there's so many different kind of, like... And it really just ends up being that person's personal system. They say it the way it makes sense to them. You know, is it a drop snatch or a snatch balance? Well, it just depends on who your coach is.
Right.
So if you're an athlete who's getting a program from somebody online, or you found a program on Breaking Muscle or Catalyst, you want to go through and make sure that you know what they actually mean by, you know, any of the exercises that they've given. Because, you know, you're going to have subtle enough differences that you might be fine following the program as given, because usually those differences are in minor accessory things. But you might be missing some of the intent if they mean keeping the elbow high through the turnover or dropping the elbow low and pressing through.
Right.
Which I think in an article Yasha Khan wrote, he referred to, like, he said that the Russians kind of call it like a technique muscle snatch is keeping the elbows high through turnover. And then like a strength muscle snatch is that flipping the elbow under and finishing with a press.
Press, yeah.
And apparently they kind of consider them two different exercises and program them for different loads or rep schemes accordingly. But I think it's really important to clarify, like, if you're following a program, figure out what they mean. Catalyst programs, it's really easy because his exercise library is really good.
Yeah. It tells you exactly, you know, what the only one exercise that I used to have a hard time with differentiating was a straight leg deadlift and like a Romanian deadlift.
And a stiff leg deadlift.
Those are
the three that are real weird.
Yeah, because, like, I would have a hard time differentiating, like, which version and, like, what is the difference between those three.
All right, so I'm going to take a crack at it and tell me if this is around what you agree with.
Right.
And we'll see if we can kind of highlight some of these subtle distinctions. So for me, a Romanian deadlift starts at the top and is lowered down with a slight bend in the knee and an arch in the back to not quite touching the floor and brought back up. So either to below the knees if the flexibility isn't there, or all the way, or just off the floor and coming back up, constant tension. For me, a stiff-legged deadlift would be a very high hips tabletop start with a slight bend in the knee, and then each rep starting and ending on the floor. And a straight-legged deadlift would be knees locked out, a slight round in the back, is how I would differentiate those three. So, like, a straight-legged deadlift would be, like, kind of like a round back deadlift.
Yeah.
Which has fallen largely out of favor.
Yeah, it's not a very widely used movement, because a lot of people have a problem with the back, like, rounding. But, no, though, I agree with that. The way that you describe each of those, and that's how I would break them all apart too. But initially, when I first started, like, I really couldn't understand the difference, or I didn't know the difference.
And you see it all the time. People, you know, doing RDLs, touching the ground, or, you know, even something as simple as a lunge. Does that mean step forward? Does that mean step backward? You know, you could make it, I mean, yeah, you could call it reverse lunge if you wanted to step backward. But someone might just say, oh, you're lunging, and then intuitively step backwards. You know, that might be your first thought when you hear lunge is a reverse lunge, right. You know, so it matters to kind of figure out what exactly people mean.
Yeah.
And it's just so interesting that, like, sometimes the words that we have aren't the best tools if we leave it as really simple. So I tend to end up writing a lot on a program because instead of just, like, assuming that people are going to know what I'm talking about, especially if I'm not going to be there when they're, like, going through it, I try to make either the description of the exercise, like, very, very clear, mm-hmm. or even underneath that, I'll add a separate line kind of giving a, like, one or two sentence description of what I want people to do. Just because I feel like it's so easy to be like, you know, it's like, oh, if it's hang snatch, like, does that mean above the knee or below the knee? Well, it could mean either. So you have to really make sure that you're specifying. So yeah. I think, like, as a coach, it's really important to be clear with what you mean when you're writing a program, especially for somebody that's, like, a remote athlete.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I agree. And I used to give a hard time to CrossFitters about calling, like, a snatch a squat snatch, or, you know, something like to that effect, because when we say snatch, we automatically are talking about the full lift, but then you break it apart after that. So then it would become a power snatch or a hang power snatch or a hang snatch. So, like, when you say snatch, it basically means the full movement, the entirety of the classical lift. But, like, in CrossFit, they'll say a snatch, but in the workout, it could be a variation of any of those. Yeah. And if there's no specificity, then you could end up doing any, you know, sequence of that part of the exercise. And weightlifting is not like that. Like I said, we start off with the classic lift in its entirety. So the snatch is a snatch. You're doing the full range of motion all the way into the squat, standing all the way up. But then we break it apart based on individual components that we want to maximize, you know, an efficiency and technique, or work on a specific portion that's weak in the lifter. So, like, for the variation of a muscle, if we want to work on speed in the pull through and continuing to pull after it passes the hips, then we use a muscle snatch. But I think that a lot of the time, there really isn't a standard. It just depends on your coach and what your coach wants to see and how they break it down. And Grayson really does a good job of doing that. Aside from the couple things where him and I, and we are on the same page on it now. Like, I know when he says muscle snatch, I know that he means no contact. But when he writes his program, he's pretty clear on this is what I want, and this is where, you know, the movement needs to happen, and what kind of, you know, thing you want to see associated with the terminology that you're describing.
Yeah, I mean, I think and also, like, if when it comes down to it, if somebody's making contact or not making contact on their muscle snatch, I'm not gonna throw a fit either way. You know, you're gonna be getting the same thing done. It's just slightly different how much the arms are involved. Mm-hmm. And that difference is honestly probably negligible. One devil's argument advocate, like just devil's argument for defending the use of saying squat snatch, because a split snatch is a snatch.
Right, and that's what I was going to bring up too, yes.
So, like, I think that I first heard this argument made on, I think it was a blog on Coffee's Gym. I think Ever Baker might have wrote it. And he was saying that, you know, some of the earliest books published about snatch, like, full snatch technique, what we call today, was called, like, Secrets of the Squat Snatch. And the reason being is that the squat was a further development to technique. So originally everybody would split.
Hmm.
And it took decades and decades for people to start moving to the squat style. So then everybody was saying, well, what is this squat snatch that everyone's doing? Because before that, the word just snatch always meant split.
Right.
So there is some, but it's really a semantic argument because today snatch just means full squat.
Right.
So but you can, if you want to be a pain, you can make that, you know, like, well, technically you could, a split snatch is a snatch. So you have to say squat to differentiate that you don't mean right. split. But then nobody split snatches really. So it's not, I don't know if it's a good argument as far as arguments go, but practicality wise, you can just right. say snatch and that's what we do.
That's true. Yeah. And funny thing is a split snatch is still acceptable in competition.
Absolutely.
You can still do it. And a split clean. So yeah, that's kind of why I like stopped harping on CrossFit for like calling it a squat snatch. Cause yeah, you could still split snatch, I guess. Like, it's just not common.
And I mean, it's a different sport. So, you know, if they want to define snatch as any movement to overhead and right. then specify whether that's muscle power or squat, why not?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But
let them have at it.
Clarify what you're supposed to be doing right. because people will kind of do whatever they want.
Yeah. Or they just won't understand and it'll get frustrating for them too.
Do you think that there needs to be some sort of standardization? Like, would you like to see some sort of top-down thing from USA Weightlifting saying we are adopting these standards so that our programs are cohesive across the board? Like, do you think that there should be more like standardization of coaching within USA Weightlifting? Like, should we all be doing the same thing?
I don't think so. I think we're a decentralized organization in the fact that there's not one specific area where things come down from as far as like the way things should be programmed, how exercises should be completed, how athlete development programs should be run. It's mostly just a governing body just saying, this is us as a collective, how we're going to run things, the set of rules that we agree on. But as far as how athletes are trained and how they're developed and the exercises that we use to get them to the level that that they're trying to get to or to the highest level possible, like, there's really not really a huge push for it. And I don't think there needs to be because we're getting athletes to the levels that they need to be based on our own individual experiences and coaching abilities and knowledge and our applications of the exercises as we know them. So
I mean, I see two sides to this and I haven't quite made up my mind where I fall. So on one hand, I think that it's very fitting with American culture that we value the individual and we want to be able to make and refine ourselves and like learn things ourselves and put it to the test and do the experiments. Or if we have an idea, we like to be able to run with that idea and really implement our vision and what we want our people to be doing. And I think that that's a really, you know, powerful undercurrent in our culture is like that idea of like, this is you doing it yourself and you can seek guidance. And yeah, USAW does their courses so that, you know, it's at least people have been exposed to the same things,
right.
but it's not a dictation of this is the order that you teach. This is, it's guidance. It's here's one way to do it. Figure out that whatever way works best, but here's an option.
Right.
But one of the benefits of having a kind of top-down dictatorial, this is the technique that you use, these are the way that you train, all of the programs will look like this. They might be different as you're going to be tailoring to athletes, but exercise terminology, all of that stuff is the same. And what happens with that is the benefit is that when you get a brand new kid day one, who's like 11, he's going to have the same consistency in his coaching as he moves from like a youth club coach to like going to the national team to going to the international team.
Oh, yeah.
So there's an argument that like some of the reason that, you know, Russia and China is really good is that all of their coaches are doing a lot of the same things. And there's that consistency over the course of an athlete's career rather than somebody coming up under one system and then moving, you know, or coming up under like a very Russian coach and then moving to a Bulgarian coach later on.
Right.
You know, there's going to be more consistency if the system is kind of better built out. But then you do kind of lose that individual wiggle room of like, well, I just want to see if my ideas work, and right. I have an idea, and I, you know.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, you would lose some of the autonomy of being able to choose your own way to go about it. And then, well, on the other side, though, is you would lose program hoppers. Yeah. Because everybody would be doing roughly the same thing and being developed in the same way. So the people that hop from program to program or from coach to coach, they wouldn't be able to do that because everybody would have the same, like, philosophy and doctrine as far as, like, how they're coaching and approaching athlete development.
Yeah, so I think that the program hopping is actually a really good example because in the countries that have that kind of standardization, weightlifting isn't like a recreational fitness thing. It's like, you know, you don't meet very many recreational 100-meter runners. It's the same thing for weightlifting, you know, elsewhere. It's like, well, this is what you do for, this is like a competitive thing. So they're in sport schools and it's much more kind of organized and, you know, funded. Whereas we have, you know, we don't have a steady feed of people coming into a sports school that we work at. What we have are individuals making purchasing decisions.
Right.
So they're going to choose whatever product they like the best. And if they like one style more than another, or if they like one environment more than another, or they jive well with a particular coach, that's more what's making the decision about the programming rather than, you know, like trying to make it as far as they can through the sports school system.
Right.
You know, it's more of like, you know, because most people doing weightlifting are doing it for fitness and for fun. So saying, okay, this is for fun and for fitness, now you have to fit into this program exactly and do everything that we're saying at this point, yeah, and this is the only way we're going to do it, I think would be really off-putting to a lot of the people that are just doing it for recreation.
Right, which is a problem because the sport isn't very large to begin with. We don't have a huge swath of the population just trying to beat down the door to get into the weightlifting gyms. We're already dealing with a small percentage of the population that want to compete, and then an even smaller population that just wants to do it because they like it, and, you know, it's their method of staying in shape and getting exercise.
Yeah, so I think there's good arguments to be made on either end. Like, we might get, maybe it's that if we had that kind of a system in place, we'd get a few more people on the higher end through to bigger competitions or more results.
Yeah.
But what we lose is the uniquely American, like, weightlifting as therapy, weightlifting as, right, like, you know, self, like, just like, this is my self-expression time. Like, I, yeah, just like,
or self-care.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Even just, you know, taking care of your body and doing something for your physical and mental health.
Yeah, so I worry that we'd lose that if we did do that kind of big top-down standardization. Right. It's kind of crazy. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think that would happen because our society is capitalistic anyway. So conforming to a specific way of doing things from the government body standpoint would just it would diminish the amount of reach that it has. Because it would make it more narrow, as opposed to just like, oh, well, this club offers this, and they're, you know, community development site. So, you know, you would have to centralize things and have like a sports training center in this city and then one in this. It, just like it used to be, like the Olympic Training Center used to be where athletes went for Olympic weightlifting to train together, right, for camps and things like that. But now it's not. It's decentralized. So it would be taking a step backwards to try to step back from that model and then try to integrate like something that was more linear and saying, this is how you're going to do it from now on.
Yeah. And I think that, the competition between clubs actually pushes results up probably.
Yeah.
So if it's like, oh, we're doing our thing and we're going to come after them and make sure that we're kind of like trying to beat these guys, or, you know, like you see these big teams kind of battling it out for who's going to place at American Open mm-hmm. or Nationals as the best team. And I think that that really encourages the members of those teams, like, oh no, we got to do this for our club, for right. our like little, you know, individual community of this, rather than, you know, I'm not sure what the like inter-club competition is like in Russia or China, but I mean, I can imagine that it would be somewhat less just based on the structure.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't think about that. Like, I don't know if there's different clubs that are competing with each other for records, or they're all just pushing toward one goal, and that's competing at the Olympics, or, you know, getting national records, or, you know, the Asian World Game records, stuff like that.
Yeah, because I know that they have a national record system, and I'm sure they have local clubs, but it's a feeder system.
Right.
Where, like, that coach that starts that person doesn't go with them their whole career. Once they get good enough, you send them off to the next camp. And then they get good there, they go off to the next one. And right. it's kind of a tiered system. I don't know. It would be kind of interesting to see the alternative. Just, like, what would that look like? But I think that we're probably on the better end of things right now. Just being able to have that autonomy.
Yeah. And name things what we want and program them how we want to.
Exactly. Exactly.
So one thing that we wanted to get into is, speaking of, you know, kind of like individualism and things like that, we were having this discussion about how in modern days, especially in this year already, we're getting into this idea of hustler culture. And a culture that's defined by, like, thank God it's Monday. Like, hit the work week hard, hustle and grind, rise and grind, you know. And we came across this article, and it basically, it identified this problem that it's like a burnout culture, idealism. And people are saying that, you know, if you're not working more than 40 hours a week, you're not hustling and grinding. If you're not, you know, at the office, or you're not, you know, constantly being inspired by whatever you're doing to be more productive, then you're not hustling and grinding. And it's promoting this idea of just like, you should absolutely work yourself to death because it's admirable to do so. And a hashtag for the opposite, anything that would be counter to that isn't glamorous. Like taking a break, watching a movie, enjoying an activity, you know, playing a video game, or, you know, just being outside and not doing anything in particular is kind of getting frowned upon because you should be hustling and grinding. You should be out. You should be dominating your competition, because basically the idea is that there's somebody out there that's working harder than you, that's doing more than you're doing, that's, you know, sleeping less than you're sleeping, and you should be stepping up your game to match that level of effort output.
Yeah, so this article was really good. It was in the New York Times. It was called Why Are Young People Pretending to Love Work? And I thought it was really kind of interesting because I think it touches on a lot of the stuff that we've kind of talked about of, you know, maximizing how much of your time is spent doing things that you want. And I thought one of the most interesting things that they brought up was that largely they were kind of talking about tech industry stuff.
Right.
But it was, yeah, the thank God it's Monday thing just seems like you have to force yourself to pretend that's true. And like one of the workspace places, I think it's what was it called?
WeWork.
Yeah. That's what it was. So they're kind of like one of those independent workspaces where you pay to lease a desk or whatever.
Right.
And you can go in and everybody has different jobs, but they're all tech workers. And they were saying that their dream is that they're trying to expand from just like a communal workspace to making that like the bottom floor of an apartment building with childcare and other stuff, just so you can work more. And, you know, like bragging about, you know, putting in, you know, 70, 80 hours a week. They're basically saying that it's like you're internalizing like you're attaching your identity to how much money you can make for your company, but it doesn't necessarily result in like you're not the primary beneficiary if you're doing that kind of a thing. Like you're really just kind of benefiting the shareholders in your company. And yeah, you might be getting a decent salary, and they incentivize people to stay at work longer by giving them catered meals and these sort of things.
Right.
But at the end of the day, you're really still just like something that would be otherwise miserable. It seems like they're finding a way to be like, no, this is actually what I want. And I think that that idea about like, what are we doing work for is kind of what it made me think about. Like, why do we do work? And it seems like in the past, the answer was we do work so that we can afford to do things when we're not at work. And it was, you know, you go in and work isn't your passion. You save your passion for when you're, you know, off.
Right.
You know, you're doing something else.
Yeah.
You know, you work to provide for yourself, and then you have your hobbies and your interests outside of that. And it seems like what's going on is that people are trying to make the work the most important thing, and everything else is kind of an ancillary. And you even kind of see that with like when you meet somebody new for the first time, what's the first thing you ask? What do you do?
What do you do for a living?
Yeah. Why is that the first thing that we ask?
Well, I hate that question. And that question is kind of derived from like, how much respect should I give to you for what you do for a living?
Exactly.
And I really hate that. It's just like, oh, well, you know, if you don't have this upscale white collar job, then you don't deserve the amount of respect that somebody that, you know, cleans the bathrooms at, you know, a hospital deserves.
Yeah, it immediately like kind of creates this comparison where you're like, am I better than this person or worse than this person?
Yeah, exactly.
So like I heard somebody mention like, what if we just started, like, I haven't tried it yet, and it might be kind of a fun project mayhem thing for everybody this week. If you meet someone new, just ask, who are you? Instead of, what do you do?
Yeah, who are you?
Like, I don't know. That would be a really rough introductory question, but I think that you'd get more. They'd be like, oh, you know, I'm into, you know, reading popular science, and I'm interested in, I have a fish tank, and, oh, and I do this for a living. You know, it's like, but I don't know, like, do you think it's healthy to, like, make it who you are, what you do?
Yeah, I don't think so. Because what if you're not doing something that you enjoy? You're not defined by that. Or you don't want to be, at least. You know,
yeah.
Because, like, and a lot of people, I don't know if you've ever sat down and thought about it, but actually, earlier this week, I kind of wrote a couple notes down as I was journaling about what I'm about. Like, who am I? What am I about? Like, what are my values? What do I choose to pursue, you know, in the world and in my own life? And when somebody asks, like, what do you do for a living? It just kind of seems like a rude way of saying, oh, how much money do you make? And how much respect should I give you? And so I think that maybe asking, like, who are you? Not in a rude way, but in a, like, what are you about? Like, what kind of stuff are you into? As opposed to, like, what do you do for your job? Because if we're going to differentiate ourselves in this kind of culture where the burnout culture where your life is defined by your work, there's nothing wrong with that. If you're consumed by what you do for a living, that's fine. And some people will be. But if you expect everybody to be like that, and you look down on them for not being that way, I don't really agree with that. Like, I don't think that's a good way to go about viewing people. Like, people, if you think that your worth is determined by how much work you do every week, then you're basically devaluating yourself. You're basically making yourself a consumable.
Yeah.
And I don't agree with that.
Well, and also it's just unsustainable.
Right.
You know, like, I think that if you're putting in, you know, a 14-hour day every day or more, like, at a certain point, that's going to really start to negatively impact everybody. Like, it's going to become a generational problem of, like, health outcomes.
Yeah.
You know, because if you look at people who work swing shifts or super long hours and are sacrificing sleep and exercise and all that stuff to do so, I think that it's going to cause not just social problems that it is, but it's going to be causing, you know, like, tangible physical health problems. And one of the arguments that they made in this article that I thought was really interesting was they were like, well, where does this kind of idea come from? And they said that they thought that in large part, they think that some of it comes from like residuals of like people are becoming less religious as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
But our country was founded on, you know, kind of Protestant values. And one of the big things in that is that work isn't a means to the end. Work is like important. Like work is good in itself.
Right.
Like just working really hard, whatever it is that you're doing, is good. And you should be like constantly, you know, pushing yourself to work harder. And it's saying basically while we've kind of drifted away from the community aspects of like, you know, everybody in a neighborhood meeting up in one place for an afternoon once a week and kind of having these kind of outside things, as that sort of dissolved, what's happened is that people have started to put that same kind of devotion to their jobs rather than having this kind of community outward thing. But that ethic is so ingrained in our culture regardless that people are still like, oh, so now work is good, but I really identify with the community of the place that I work, so I'm just going to be here all the time.
Right.
And they're kind of they made some kind of snarky comments about how Elon Musk is your priest now, and when you go, you're worshiping your boss. And I think that might be a little bit too far.
At the altar of Tesla.
Yeah, the altar of Tesla. But I think that because like I do see a counter argument is that maybe the reason a lot of people in our generation are working a lot more is that what if we just legitimately like what we're doing more? Like that, and that's a hard one to dispel, because like it could be that yeah, people genuinely like they're able to work in fields that they're more passionate about, and that might be more true than of our parents who, you know, worked whatever job until they could retire, and then
right.
But it was just kind of like, oh, this is just what I do. But it might be that people have like are rebelling against that and they're finding kind of more passion projects, but those tend to require more time.
That's a possibility. The other thing might be that if it requires that amount of time to be successful, right, and then you're pouring more time into it by like only reading books that'll have what you would call a return on investment, right? So if you're running a business and you're only reading books about business, and then your free time is only spent listening to TED Talks about entrepreneurs and stuff like that, like you're not pursuing anything outside of what you're doing unless it has a specific tie-in with it. So then you don't read any books about fiction or watch any movies or, you know, play any video games, or you don't have any external input other than, you know, the exact things that are tying in with what you're already working on. So it's just this continuous work loop. So that's what I think isn't productive or healthy, because being passionate and being dedicated to what you're trying to accomplish isn't bad. I don't think it is. And I think that if you want something, you do have to work for it. You do have to work hard at it. And this ties in with weightlifting especially, because like you're not going to be able to get to higher numbers unless you put in more work, or you're putting in more focused, dedicated work. But just doing 3 sessions a day isn't necessarily going to get you results either. Like you have to have a recovery period. You have to have a period where your body rests. And I think that's the same with work, and with the way we should approach it is, you know, we have our work, but it shouldn't define who we are. Just like the amount of money you have in your wallet doesn't define who you are, or, you know, the number of zeros in your bank account doesn't define who you are. Just like your job, like what you do for a living shouldn't define who you are. It is part of who you are.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely hard because, I mean, I know that both of us, you know, getting our gym up and running, we put in a ton of time. But I feel like it's like, it feels different to me because the time I was putting in was for me and it was something I wanted to do.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would have that same drive and passion to put in the amount of time that we did on somebody else's project, you know? I don't know. It's that loop that you talked about, I think, is definitely true, because if you're only kind of reinforcing what your current project or obsession is and you're not letting yourself go outside of that one track of thought, you might be kind of depriving yourself of like inspiration you can see elsewhere. Like you might read something or watch something and go, that's what I needed for this thing.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of overlap. And if you kind of like isolate yourself to where you're just surrounded by other people doing the same thing you're doing and you're all kind of working on this project, you know, you need to have time apart from that to be able to bring some sort of inspiration to it. And, you know, the other thing that we want to talk about is, where do we see examples of this kind of like hustle culture in fitness or weightlifting? And I think, you know, I really dislike the word grind.
Grind, yeah.
I don't like the word grind. I think that it's not a very apt example of how you should be thinking about your time in the gym, because, like, to me, grinding is like, it's awful and you don't really want to be doing it and it's like tedious and, you know, kind of just vacant of any sort of joy, you know? Like, it's just like this horrible thing and you just got to slog away at it and get through it and then you'll get better. But I think that if you're approaching your training with the idea of, I just got to slog through this, it's going to be so hard, I'm really tired, I'm going to make this look difficult, you know, I don't think it's a helpful like mentality.
Right.
And I also don't think it's helpful to have that kind of, I wake up, I get 4 hours of sleep and wake up at 5 a.m. so I can lift. You know, I don't think that's the way to approach it. One, to get the results that you actually want, you'd be better off sleeping more and training a little bit less. If you're looking at like what's important for body composition, like if you want to get leaner or better at the lifts and you can only afford to do 3 days of like training, but you get enough sleep, you're going to get results twice as fast as if you did 6 days of training, but slept half as much.
Right.
You know? So like this, like, I don't know. It seems like, does it seem like sometimes on social media, the reason people are doing things is that they want to brag about the work they're doing so that they'll get told good job for it, essentially? Like, do you think people are kind of addicted to the likes?
I think so. I think, it's like, what was the word for it? It's when you're kind of boasting about hustling, and so it's kind of, oh, the word is performative workaholism.
Yeah.
That's what it is. So like you're a workaholic and you can be that in and outside of the gym, but by posting it on Instagram and telling people that you're working and grinding, you're performing. So like you're basically a performative workaholic. So like you're displaying the fact that you're a workaholic in a positive light.
It's like, yeah, I studied for 6 hours for a test this morning, worked for 8, and now I'm at the gym hitting my heavy singles. Everything killed me today. I'm hurting so badly. Hustle.
Hashtag grinding.
And like I think that it's you know, it seems like it encourages people to like stretch themselves really thin.
Yeah. Yeah, it's burnout culture.
Yeah, like, and you know, the reason I don't like that for weightlifting is I want people to want to do this for a long time.
Yeah.
And if you are burning yourself out, trying to do extra training or training more often than your lifestyle allows you to, then it's gonna be kind of a negative pushback. And you know, I love training and I love the like hard work aspect of it, but I still think of training as something I get to do for fun. You know, like it's like, this is my break. Like yeah. I'm enjoying this. So whenever I'm lifting, even if it's hard and I'm kind of struggling to get through my squats that day, I'm not grinding. I'm having fun at the gym. I'm doing something that I chose to do because yeah. I like it. Like it would be grinding if I had to break rocks in the sun for 6 hours, you know, like if you're doing something physically grueling and gratuitous against your will, yeah, that's grinding. But coming in and trying to get your snatch doubles to look a little better on the last set than the first set isn't grinding. That's a privilege. Like yeah. you get to do that. You should like celebrate the fact that you get to do that kind of work. Like it's not, you know, it just makes it seem like people are like begrudgingly training.
Right.
And you shouldn't, and if you're begrudgingly doing it, you probably don't like doing it.
Right.
And like, you're going to have days that you don't want to go in, you have to force yourself, but those should be pretty rare, you know, like.
Yeah. I don't think there's a lot of times where I'm headed to the gym and was like, oh, I really don't want to work out and this isn't going to be fun. And you know, it's not that I'm lazy, I just don't care type thing. it's like I'm looking forward to it. This is a part of the day that I really enjoy, and you know, the struggle is in the strength, or the strength is in the struggle, you know. So it's like embracing the struggle, but not necessarily embracing the idea of just like slogging through a tedious thing. Like it's a struggle, so that's what makes it worth doing. But it's not this mentally, you know, slog through the mud of training. And I don't ever see it that way. And Grayson's right. If you're looking at training that way, or if you're looking at anything you're doing that way, then is it really worth
doing? Are you enjoying it?
Yeah.
Like if you view your job as like, I'm just going to dig in and get through all of these reports and fix these 5 lines, and I'm going to, you know, just put in as much time as I can, and it sucks and I'm tired, but it's just, I did a lot of stuff today.
Yeah.
Like it seems like that's like gonna be bad in the long run.
It's not sustainable.
Well, and that kind of brings to a kind of a deeper question of like, what, like, do we place too much value? Like, should working a lot and, you know, well, because like the side thing is like the motivation for working a lot might be, oh, I'm going to, you know, improve my company or grow this thing, or, but it can also be just, I'm going to have more resource. I'm going to have more money and more prestige. And, you know, what if we really take a look at that idea that more work is always good and that work is good in itself, and start looking at like, well, what other ways can I, you know, like, how much is your time worth?
Yeah.
And, like, is it worth it to just have more time to yourself but less things? Like, why, like, can we make it, you know, more okay to choose lifestyles that aren't revolved around work? And it seems like it's really hard to.
It really is. I think that if you told somebody that you wanted to work less and be less productive in that capacity, like, people would kind of look at you in a strange way. It was like, what do you mean? And I think that we place too high a value on the idea of productivity. Because let's say you are trying to run a business, or you are trying to do, you know, you have this goal that you want to accomplish, and you're putting 80 hours a week into it, right? But you're not really getting anywhere. You just look like you're busy. You're not actually accomplishing anything. And the difference is that, like, if you were traveling down a road and you had no idea where you were going, you're just walking for the sake of saying that you're covering distance. that's not the same as saying you actually have a destination and that you're getting to where you need to go. And that's like the differentiation is work hard and smart, not just work hard or not just work smart, but both. It's like work hard and work smart, work in a direction that's going to get you to where you want to go and actually accomplish something, as opposed to just saying that you're running around on the hamster wheel for 80 hours a week and doing, you know, all these things to make you look busy on whatever social media platform people want to post it on. So like getting up in the morning, checking your Instagram, oh yeah, checking all these accounts that say, get up, hustle and grind, check your watch at 4 a.m., take a picture of it and say, you know, about to kill this day. That, I think, is a bad approach. And I think it's more beneficial to say, well, there's times when I need to step back and I can work less hard because I'm working smarter and I'm going in a direction that I want to go in and it's accomplishing what I want to accomplish. And then doing less of what you don't want to do. Like for me, I'd rather do less shit that I don't want to do than do 80 hours a week, have a paycheck that's three times what you would normally make, and then just be miserable not having any free time. Like I can get one of those jobs where, oh yeah, I can work 80 hours fixing airplanes in some foreign country and be miserable and just go back to a bunk at night, you know, and be making three times what I would make anywhere else, but that life sucks and I don't want to do that.
Yeah, so I think that we just have to, you know, talk about the fact that you can have goals outside of you know, seeing how much money you can rack up before you can retire, you know, and you can structure your life to be guiding yourself more towards just time for you to do what you want to do. And, you know, it's okay to sacrifice some of your top end income to have more of that time to yourself, because, you know, if you have time to, you know, read and do the things that you want, or get some time in nature, or, you know, just generally like take a break, you're probably going to be more productive at what you're doing anyway.
Yeah.
If you're, you know, only focus is training and you're losing sight of, you know, actually maintaining relationships with your friends, or, you know, getting to, you know, do something, like if you're only in the weightlifting realm where you're just watching videos and then thinking about training and then going to training and then reviewing your videos from training before watching more videos and going to bed.
Right.
Like that's a way that you can get burned out too. And you need to make sure that you have, whether in your career or, you know, whatever sport you're pursuing, like time to do something else, just enough to get, you know, refreshed a little bit. And if you're starting to feel burned out, changing something up. You know, there's a lot of different ways to train, like, and there's a lot of different things to call it, like we said earlier. And, you know, if you're getting burned out on your really heavy snatch, clean and jerk progression, maybe you need to take a little bit of a break to focus on some strength exercises or some gymnastic stuff. Because if you are doing this as a way to stay in shape in the long run, you know, you don't want to burn yourself out. You want to make sure that you have enough variety that you're not kind of just feeling like you're grinding when you're coming to the gym.
Yeah.
You know, you want to be excited about it.
Yeah, and it's just treat yourself like you're more than just a consumable resource. You know, you're a human being and you have more value than just what the amount of hours that you can put in behind a desk. Or, you know, it goes back to saying, like, who are you? You know, if you want to define yourself as, you know, the person that's hustling and grinding and working, you know, sustainable, trying to sustain an 80-hour work week, and, you know, that's fine that you have that choice, that we have an individualistic, you know, way of looking at things and our goals. But a healthier approach would be to not treat yourself like, you know, you're a match and that you're just going to burn brightly for a little bit and then that's it for you. You know, you have more longevity than that, and you can have more longevity than that if you just take a different approach to what you want out of life and the things that, you know, you value and you seek out. So, and that goes for weightlifting too. It's just like, if you want to, you know, be a great weightlifter, sometimes it's not about putting in 3 hour, you know, three hour sessions in a day. Cause if you look at those documentaries from the Bulgarians, they didn't look like they wanted to be there at all. They looked like they were miserable. They were world champions and they were Olympians, and but at what cost?
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, if you're, you know, if you're really pushing for high levels, yeah, I mean, you're gonna have to work when you don't feel like it, and there's gonna be some trade-off. But it's okay to have, you know, if you're like, but you still have to be taking pleasure from it, because it has to be deferred, right? It's kind of that like Epicurean thing where it's, you know, it's not hedonism in that you just need to enjoy every moment of your day, but the things that you're doing need to be building yourself towards a future enjoyment or a future benefit. And, you know, so as long as, you know, so weightlifting training, you might have to slog through it a little bit, but if you're not enjoying the end process of that, like, you need to make sure that you're, you know, actively wanting to continue, because the biggest thing that, you know, if you burn out, you're never going to be great.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. That's pretty cut and dry. If you burn out, you're not going to get to where any level of proficiency that's beyond the norm. So, all right. Well, that concludes everything that I wanted to add in. You wanted to add anything else in?
No, I think that's it for the week, guys. We are on episode 26. So we now have more than one full day of Mundo and I rambling about stuff. So don't work too hard this week, unless it's for you.
That's right.
Or something.
Yeah. So, happy lifting.